Namaste. This is Francie, and welcome back to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast, a place where we get to go deep with yogis, thought leaders, cultural creatives, and consciousness explorers to spread love, inspire you, and spread the good vibes. I believe that yoga is helping to change the planet, so I really hope you enjoy this episode. If you want to stay connected, sign up for our love letter at pureflow.yoga and receive our free weekly love and inspirations, as well as be the first to know about our new podcast and blog releases. We'll also share special deals here on our yoga retreats and trainings that we just don't share anywhere else. And if you like this episode and want to keep supporting us to create free, awesome things for you, feel free to support us with a monthly contribution. You can find that at pureflow.yoga/podcast. Your journey to becoming more inspired and connected begins now. Welcome to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast. Today, I am delighted to welcome Kathy Pearson, founder of Yoga Deep and the Celtic Woodland Yoga Festival. Born in Ireland, Kathy is an award-winning feature documentary filmmaker, yoga teacher, and spiritual educator. She's also a mother and a proponent of natural birth, and she's been involved with yoga for over 20 years. In that time, she's been living between Ireland, Thailand, India, and Bali, deepening her understandings of the incredible depths of yoga, studying and practicing a variety of styles and disciplines from Iyengar and Hatha to Ashtanga and meditation. For the past 18 years, Kathy has been in a deep process of spiritual healing and purification and is qualified as a certified cellular healing therapist. This process is called Transforming Cellular Memory, or TCM, where intuitive and psychic skills are developed to clear the pathways for sacred energy to flow through, to help us unlock old behavior and thought patterns, and to help us raise our levels of consciousness in a profound and powerful way. Her new project, the Celtic Woodland Yoga Festival, Ireland's first international yoga festival, launches this July 2019 in Ireland. Kathy, welcome. I am so happy to have you here.
Thanks, Francie. Thanks for inviting me.
So tell me a little bit about your journey, where you're at, and what you're offering.
Well, I suppose I began my yoga journey through meditation, not through asana practice, which seems a bit more common today. And I was about 19 years old, living in Brussels at the time, and going through quite an existential crisis. And I came home to Ireland and told my mum I thought I was depressed. So she asked me why I thought I was depressed, and I just wasn't feeling happy or excited about anything, and underwhelmed most of the time. So she had an idea, which I'm grateful to forever, is she had a friend who was a very renowned psychiatrist in Ireland. So he came to see me, and being 19 and thinking I knew the answer to everything, the first thing I told him when I saw him was that I needed antidepressants. And he took out a flute and started playing the flute. And I was just getting really angry that he wasn't listening to me. And he kept playing this like beautiful music, but he wasn't really listening. And then he finished this piece of music and he put down the flute and he said, "What makes you think you're depressed?" And I had no answer for that question. It just completely disarmed me. And he said, "I don't think there's anything wrong with you." And that just really, really rung loudly to me, that sentence, "There's nothing wrong with you." So he said, "You need to learn how to meditate." And I had no idea what that meant. I didn't grow up in an environment where that was spoken about or where that was part of my daily education. So for the next 8 weeks after that, I went to his house every Tuesday and he taught me how to meditate. And then he gave me homework that for 45 minutes every morning I had to do this practice. So I did that for about 3 months. I don't know how, but I was a pretty disciplined student at the time, even though I was only 19 and none of my friends are doing this. So I did that, and after a very short time, 2 or 3 weeks, I started to just notice this difference, and I started to realize that it was my first realization that I was not my mind. And I went back to him, and we would have like amazing conversations about this. And he was about 75 at the time. He's still practicing. His name is Dr. Ivor Brown. He's in his 90s, I think, now, and he's still a practicing psychiatrist in Ireland. But he was the first psychiatrist in Ireland who really started to move away from prescription drugs and start to work with the mind from an kind of the practice of meditation and observation of the activity of the mind. And then years later, when I was in Pondicherry in India, many years later, I found out where he had been, and he had been part of the Sri Aurobindo community in Pondicherry, and that was his teacher, and that whole lineage was his teacher. And I didn't know that at the time because I really didn't know.
Can you tell us a little bit about Aurobindo and Auroville? It's a conscious community.
Yeah, he's one of the great kind of teachers of yoga, of integral yoga, and a great meditation teacher who Ivor found in the 60s, I think. And it's sort of, as he was studying psychiatry, and it kind of influenced the rest of his work.
That's so progressive for that time in Ireland, I would imagine.
Yeah, I suppose that was the early 90s.
Wow. So from there, you started practicing meditation on your own.
Well, from there, I packed my bags and went to India. Because there really wasn't a whole lot of that happening in Ireland at the time. There was a Buddhist center, and I kept going there, practicing meditation there. But there really was a little bit of yoga, but a couple of teachers, but not so many. So I went to India, and I did that for years and years. I would go and spend 5 or 6 months a year in India and truck around and go to Rishikesh and Dharamsala and Kerala and Goa and all the places that used to be fun to visit. And that was, you know, my education, how it started really in yoga practice. And then I ended up going to Thailand 1 year instead of India and realized how beautiful and clean and easy it was to travel as a woman by yourself in Thailand. And that was kind of the end of my relationship with India. And I spent the next 17, 18 years in Thailand, and I still have a strong foothold and connection to Thailand.
And that's actually how you and I know each other. And
yeah,
one of a lesser known fact is that the studio that I'm currently managing, Pure Flow Yoga, the predecessor, Blooming Lotus, you were one of the first people to teach in that space. It was the first purpose-built yoga space in that part of Thailand.
Yeah, I taught there for 5 years.
Wow.
On and off.
And that was your first taste of teaching yoga?
No, I'd already been teaching in Dublin a couple of years.
Okay.
So in various different studios, in Samadhi and Yoga Dublin and Open Mind. And now currently when I'm back in Ireland, I teach mostly in Little Bird, which is a really beautiful studio in the center of Dublin.
So you're well versed in the techniques of yoga, and you've been teaching that for many years. When did this transforming cellular memory aspect weave into your world? And what is it?
Okay. Oh, every time I get asked what is it, I have a different answer. To backpedal just a little bit. So through the process of yoga and learning a lot of disciplines and techniques, I started to feel after some time that while it was effective for me and great at shaping my mind and teaching me about awareness of the body, I felt that there was something missing and that I had, or maybe that I just hadn't come across yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met this teacher in 2001 or 2002. I met him in Dublin, an American guy called Don Hansen, and a friend at the time brought me to see him teach. And I took part in a 3-hour session with him that completely blew me away. All I can say is that I left, and for 10 months after that, I was processing that whole experience, and I just knew that something really extraordinary had just happened to me, but I had no idea what that was.
I just got shivers.
So it took me about 10 months to pluck up the courage to go back and start to study with him, because I knew I was going to have to let go a lot of my ways of life and my ways of being if I was really going to go down that road. So it was a big decision. I think the week before I really started to commit to work with him, I partied for about 2 weeks solid because I kind of felt like I was graduating from that part of my life, but I really wanted to leave that part with
live it up.
So then I met him, and I've been working with him ever since, really. And then I became an organizer of his workshops and trainings, and I did that for a long time in Thailand. And then about 10 years ago, he just said to me, look, off you go, just do your thing now, because every snowflake has its own shape and you have your offerings, and it's different to mine. So I still work with him, not as much as I would like to, because I have different responsibilities right now, being a mom. But I still consider him my primary teacher and one of the great influences of my life. He's really a master and somebody that has understood the language of energy. And in answer to your question, what is the process? It's a process of deep purification. So we all come into the world with our kind of karma and our and through our family upbringing or societal upbringing, we develop different sorts of behavioral tendencies and views, personal views, opinions. And after some time, you know, we realize at some point of our life that a lot of what we think we know is not really our own knowledge or wisdom. It's just what's been taught to us. And then we have to go, as you know, and all your listeners know, go and unpack it. So this is a process that's really helped me to learn how to work with the light or work with divine energy in a way to transform anything that the body has absorbed or is holding on to that's not of the highest vibration of love.
This is one of the things that myself and other yoga teachers say often, especially in a yin yoga session where we hold poses for a long time and we get into that layer of connective tissue in the body known as the fascia. We often say, okay, you know, we're holding every experience, every positive, especially every negative experience, every time we've activated our nervous system and we've gone into that fight, flight, or freeze mode, it stores that memory in our cellular system. And it's through these long holds that energy is given the opportunity to rise to the surface to release. So it sounds like a similar...
Yeah, it is. And then what we do in addition to that is we start to speak to the intelligence of the universe and evoke that energy of the divine to embrace whatever it is that's surfacing and then ask Great Spirit to transform it into the highest vibration of love. So it's learning a way to have direct communication with the intelligence of the universe without a teacher, without a middleman or a middlewoman, so that you start to build that own connection with your own divinity in a way that you learn this very natural way to transform. So if you have something arise in you, like a restriction or some sort of deep, difficult feeling, and it bubbles up in you and we brace up against it, all that happens is it gets embedded even deeper into the physical body or the deeper layers of the body. But if we can learn a way to just hold it open to the light and ask Great Spirit to work with us and transform it, when we watch, and we do ask that, if we watch and listen and feel, you'll very quickly notice it starts to bubble up and a transformation starts to take place and it releases from the body effortlessly.
Wow, it sounds like a really perfect complement to the more embodied practice of yoga. And yeah. I'm just thinking back about, what was it, 6 months or almost a year ago where I had a session with you and it was so profound. But I remember that I was in tears pretty much the entire time because it's really about looking at what you are pushing down and really coming face to face with the fears and the challenges and the obstacles. So it's quite a confronting practice.
It's very gently confronting.
Gently confronting, yes.
And your tears are prayers, you know, that's all that we've been holding on to. And usually when we have those kind of tears roll down our cheeks, it's like, what also comes with that is this like great sense of relief and expansion.
True. Yeah. You gotta let it rise to let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah, really beautiful. So you have been a filmmaker as well, an award-winning documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, well, my initial career was in the film industry working as a location manager, and I still do that as well. So I find locations for commercials or big feature films. I've given a script and then I go and I find appropriate locations. And so I've done that for years. I've grown up in the film business. It's my whole family were involved in it on some level. And then some years back, I think it was 2009, the industry kind of really went into this like contracted decline space where there wasn't a lot of work. And out of that space, I went to Paris and I was with a friend who's also a filmmaker, Amanda, a good friend of ours, who's also in the film business. And we were sitting in a Parisian cafe one night talking about yoga and spirituality and living in the jungle and our connection with nature and filmmaking. And this old man was sitting beside us and he said, "Excuse me, ladies, do you mind if I join you?" So he joined us for a drink and he told us he was 92, which was amazing. And then he invited us back to his house. Anyway, to cut a long story short, his name was John Morris. and he was the first picture editor for the New York Times around the time that the Vietnam War started. And even prior to that, he was picture editor for Life magazine in the 30s, in the Hollywood kind of golden age. So he was a real anti-war proponent, and the way that he kind of wanted to get his message across was that he showed the gruesome horrors of war. And he introduced me to a whole community of like incredible photojournalists who had been following this path of war journalism, going to the most dangerous places in the world, photographing some of the most iconic images that you've seen, like Eddie Adams, that very famous picture of that man with a gun being pointed mm-hmm. to his head just before execution. That was one of the photographs that John published on the front of the New York Times in 1969, which was pivotal for the public's understanding of the horrors of war. And it was influential in kickstarting the peace process and all of that kind of movement that started to happen in the late 60s, early 70s, where war for the first time was being protested against. And he was a character who, in his very long life, would do whatever he could to show the real horrors of war, and introduce me to this whole community of incredible people that like live their life on the edge, like really on the edge, you know, like on the edge mm-hmm. of war zones. So that's what the film's about. It's about his life, and it's about all those men and women that have been to these places and the iconic images they've taken and the stories behind those images.
What's the film called?
The film is called Get the Picture. And it was in 2012, it did a great round of film festivals and won some nice awards, which is great. And but after that, I had a little baby, so I've kind of put the filmmaking on hold just for now, because being superwoman is a little bit tiring sometimes.
Well, that's amazing, and that's wonderful that you've had this other creative aspect and this thread of yoga that you've been weaving in your life as a compliment mm-hmm. to that, because I imagine that the film industry, you're working super long days and it's more of a high stress environment than your typical yoga studio. So when you do that, and I think you just mentioned that you still do that every year?
So for some part of the year I take on work like that. I enjoy the sort of camaraderie-ship of teamwork and the mm-hmm. creative process, and you know, it just feeds a part of me that I don't get fed teaching yoga and retreats or studio, which I love, but it's just a different aspect of myself that I get to nourish in some way.
So I'm wondering, when you're in that world, or even just in general, do you have a daily practice? How do you weave yoga into your everyday life?
Oh gosh, well, when I'm working on films and being a parent and practicing yoga, it's really challenging. So a lot of things have to go. I have to be quite disciplined at those times in my life, and it's hard, you know. Social life gets kind of put on the side for a few months, and you know, because I want to maintain keeping a steadiness of body and a steadiness of mind, and but also need to care for my family and that. So yeah, that's the big challenge of daily life, really. I think all of us have that.
Definitely. Wonderful. So who are your main inspirations, or what books are really inspiring you at the moment?
Wow. Well, you're one of my big inspirations, Francie, actually, because you do so much and have so many talents, and I'm so inspired by you.
Oh,
truly.
You're kind.
Yeah. And so many of our peers inspire mm-hmm. me. So many of our friends, like my good friend Randall O'Leary, who was one of my first yoga teachers, has been a huge inspiration and still is. He's a co-creator on a yoga festival that we're launching this summer in July. Another great influence, as I mentioned, has been my teacher Don Hansen, and a lot of friends from that community. Another teacher called Kira Kirby, she's starting a platform right now called The Conscious Female, that I'm going to be working with her on, that which is a really extraordinary platform for spiritual education. So there'll be, hopefully that will be released by the end of this year. Kirsten Berg and Mitchell Gold are two of my most favorite people in the world, and Ashtanga teachers that I practice with for some months every year. Gosh, so many. And then just friends. Like last night I had an evening with a really old friend, Simone McKay, who's an incredible yoga teacher.
And who we've just done an interview with.
Yeah, and just sitting around drinking tea with her. Those kind of conversations inspire me the most. But I'm really blessed and fortunate to have a community of people around me, like yourself, who are all living their passion and have conquered a lot of fear to take themselves out of a matrix of restriction in their life to live more freely. And that takes great courage and is not often easy, because you've got to come up all of the day-to-day very banal issues of the world, like making money and taking care of yourself. So everyone inspires me. Everyone who's living that kind of their true path inspires me.
I love this idea of the five chimps theory. A lot of different people talk about it. I don't know who was the originator, but the idea is that you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time around. So whether that's your family, your coworkers, your friends, and I agree with you. We are so blessed to be living in these so-called conscious communities, whatever that means, but just to be surrounded by a community of people who really are activating yoga and who are really using yoga and these practices to help navigate the inevitable challenges of life, and who are really, yeah, as you say, conquering the fears and going for it. I think it's really, yeah, fuel for me as well, just to be surrounded by so many incredible beings. So we are blessed.
Yes, we are.
Tell me about the festival. I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, this is really exciting, and hopefully, I know you're not available this year, but I'm really hoping you'll come and teach on it next year.
We'll be there.
Part of the inspiration comes from, as we just talked about, our community of other teachers and educators that are, part of our kind of global network in the yoga world, and the things that they're doing, and the fact that we don't get to spend enough time with each other because everybody's always traveling to work. And then I've been so inspired by what I've seen in the Bali Spirit Festival, and what those guys have created is just really quite mind-blowing. And then the yoga scene in Ireland is still quite new. It's probably 20, 30 years old. It's not like other countries, which might have a 50-year-old tradition of this sort of stuff coming in. And I wanted to bring all of my, the people that have inspired me most over the course of my journey, I wanted to bring them together and spread some of that magic and spread some of that light and inspire as many people as we can. So it's just all, when you're on the right track and stuff just starts to happen quite effortlessly, well, that's kind of how this has unfolded. And we're going to hold the festival in this really beautiful 17th century mansion in County Louth in Ireland that's owned by the School of Philosophy. It's their Sanskrit department. So it's been a center for meditation for like decades. So it's infused with that sort of
wisdom and knowledge.
Yeah, clarity.
Wow.
And they've been so welcoming. They're really supportive of what we're trying to do. And then I have some teachers coming from Thailand and Bali and Portugal and America and Canada and UK. And, this year we're starting off quite small. There's only 150 tickets, and because we want to get the, we want to do it right. We want to make sure everybody's really well cared for and that it's comfortable and that we have an experience, and then maybe we'll make it a little bit larger next year, but we'll see how it goes so far. So yeah, that's exciting. We have like all sorts of disciplines of yoga attending, different teachers, Kundalini, Iyengar, Ashtanga. But what's really interesting is it's right beside, it's in the ancient east of Ireland, County Louth, and the location is right beside Newgrange, which is one of the oldest megalithic tombs in the world. It's even older than the pyramids.
Oh, wow.
So it's a whole land up there is very ancient and very sacred, and it's always been a place of sort of high vibration and a vortex of strong energies. So yeah, it just drew us there. And then what's happened recently, which I'm really mostly excited about, is in somehow we've all got to do our bit to address this climate crisis that we're in right now. And I really wanted to attach this festival to some worthy endeavor that we could help. And yet there's just so many of them out there. Like there's so many brilliant charities and projects taking place. It's like, I didn't know where to start. And then I was just thinking as I was driving my little boy around, trying to get him under to take a nap. And on one of these huge banyan trees here in Bali at a temple, I just thought, trees, that's what we have to do. And then I came across this organization called A Trillion Trees, and it's a science-based organization that has, you know, come to the conclusion that if we can plant a trillion trees in the next 20 years, that we can like rapidly reduce carbon emissions. So we want to get behind that endeavor, and for everybody that comes to the festival, we're going to plant a tree. And now we have some amazing advisors who are coming on board that are going to help us with doing this the right way. We've got to find out if it's the right time of year for planting, what sort of trees would be best to plant. So that's all my big research project right now. And and I know it sounds nuts, but the trees are talking to me about this.
And it just infuses so much more depth and meaning to the experience that you're providing, because not only is it a festival where you're meeting here in this present moment, but there's that social responsibility aspect where you know not only is this of benefit to you and to me and to all the people attending, but also to the planet as a whole. So that's amazing.
It's true. And I have a 3.5-year-old, and it's funny, just a little story to tell you. As this idea started to bubble, it's only like it's fresh, it's like 2 weeks old. So that's why I can't give you the whole picture on it. So as this idea started to bubble, my little boy woke up one morning just a few days ago and he said, Mommy, he's 3.5, Mommy, I just had a dream about the trees. And I said, oh yeah. And he goes, all the trees were dying and they were all falling down. Aww. And it was really, really, really scary. And I just got a little bit overwhelmed that he was so tapped into what all I was thinking about and working with this week. And I said, so were you sad? Were you scared? And he goes, no, Mommy. I put on my superhero outfit and I kicked ass. And those trees got back up again and I got all my friends and we planted those trees. Whew. So that's the spirit, you know.
Little wisdom keeper.
Behind it, you know, and we have to be in nature is our greatest teacher.
And I think also we really need to connect to, we need to connect to nature, we need to connect to each other, and most importantly we need to connect to ourselves, which is, you know, essentially the main purpose of this practice of yoga. It's connection, it's union. I threw a festival, as you know, couple years ago now called True Nature Experience, and it was this similar type of format. This, they call it a micro festival, and we also had 150 people, and instead of having 1,000 different things happening at the same time, which promotes, in my opinion, something that I struggle with is FOMO, you know, fear of missing out. I want to be here, I want to be there,
yeah,
I want to
sure.
be everywhere at the same time. So instead, we just basically had one event at the same time. We're all eating together, we're all doing music and dancing and breath together, and it just promoted so much cohesion and so much connection and so much more depth that you have than you have when you're just superficially running off to this and that and the other. So I love that you're doing this in Ireland and helping to spread the love there. That's awesome.
Oh, thank you, Francie. Well, I hope you come next year.
I'm there. And I think, you know, when something else that really strikes me about what you share is that it's a really fresh idea, and it's all just, everything has lined up in perfect synchronicity, or if you will, pure flow.
Sure.
So Pure Flow is the name of the project that I have right now. I'm a really, you know, it's really something that's really important to me. When my life flows, I'm not efforting. Things like this are happening. It's opening. Every step of the way, the path is opening. So I guess I'm interested to know, what does pure flow mean to you? And when you're not in that state of flow, how do you navigate back?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or how do you attempt to navigate
back? Well, that's a big question. Well, I think pure flow to me is understanding the language of energy. So the more that we kind of attune ourselves to the language of energy that's always speaking to us, that's always present, speaks to us through the language of feeling, in my experience, when we're kind of attuning ourselves to that, and often those feelings that we're attuning ourselves to are not so comfortable. Sometimes they're fear, and sometimes they're fear about money or fear about loss or anything like that that's uncomfortable. And we can get back in the flow when we're willing to stay wide open, even if those feelings are really crunchy and really uncomfortable, until they just pass on through, because we're here to transform and embrace it all and feel it all. We're not just here for the excitement, we're here to live it all and taste every single ingredient that's here for us in life. So I hear you. Like this project that I'm on right now, the Celtic Yoga Festival, there has been a flow, but it's not that that is the way that it is for me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure with this, there's just been an effortlessness that's happened. And so for me, that's indicative that, right, this has to happen. I just got to get my own self out of the way and let it use me as a channel to create this. It very much feels like that project. But there's been other, and the film that I made just before I had Harvey also felt like that. But there's definitely been other times, and some of them recent, where I have projects and it's just not happening like that. You know, there's obstacle or there's resistance or there's blocks, and I keep going because I feel like, well, I've put in the work, I may as well just try to get to the end of this road, and inevitably it doesn't work out. But the project doesn't work out, but I've built a lot of understanding and
mm-hmm.
wisdom along the way. So yeah, that's the practice really, isn't it? You know, I mean, the practice time on the mat and the breath work and the meditation is really where we steady ourselves to be able to have the strength to observe and stay with whatever it is that's going on, even if it's uncomfortable. And usually the nuggets and the juice and the golden kind of light is in what's uncomfortable.
Oh, I hear you there. Wish it could be a little bit more comfortable, but so Harvey, sweetest boy I've ever met in my entire life. And I love the way that he's so tapped into your dreams and your visions. And having a child must make you look at the future and the world that you want to create in I don't know, maybe a more tangible way. And I'm wondering, is there a legacy that you want to leave?
Oh, well, definitely the legacy I want to leave him is a connection to nature.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to appreciate that and find sort of a place of rest in himself. And so far, so good, because we have spent a lot of time in the jungle, and I want him to get dirty and cuts in his knees and, you know, live that world in nature. And can I tell you a small little story?
Please.
So we would be in Dublin in the winter, and he would be in his little buggy, and we'd be, you know, going around the streets, coming back from play school or wherever. And a couple of times it happened where he'd be eating something like a little biscuit or something, and he'd throw the wrapper on the street, and I used to pick it up and say, don't throw the wrapper on the street because it's garbage, and eventually it'll end up in the sea, and then the fishies won't be able to swim because there'll be so much garbage in the sea, and they'll choke, and then they'll get really sick. So I must have said this to him half a dozen times, and he'd be like, yeah. And then one day we were in Thailand on the beach, and I think you were there with us, and there'd been a big storm the night before, and it had washed in this huge amount of plastic onto the beach, and it was heartbreaking to see. It was just plastic bottles and flip-flops and straws and just trash, rubbish, garbage. And Harvey said to me, look, Mom, all the kids have been throwing all the garbage out of their buggies, and the fish have just puked it all up. And I just thought, he would never have made that association had it not been seeing it for himself in reality, rather than it being a concept of something I'm telling him to understand.
Mm.
But he actually saw that garbage is making the place dirty and stinky, and it's hurting the fish and it's hurting the environment. So he got it, and he's 3 and a half now, and he won't throw anything on the floor anymore. And if he sees anybody doing it, he's just like, be careful, the fish won't be able to swim. So that, you know, in answer to a long-winded answer to your question about legacy, is I'm feeling very passionate about that environmental kind of connection right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been fairly heartbreaking. I've been, you know, Thailand-based for 7 years now, and just to watch the land and the waters changing,
mm-hmm.
and to see all that rubbish washing up, and yeah, there's so many different approaches people take. A lot of people just sort of distract themselves with something else, and you know, it's just this overwhelming thing of how do we deal with this, and it is sort of, I guess, up to us and this next generation to start, you know, building education and solutions around.
Sure. And I think that there's a really big movement for that right now, and there's a lot of positive changes happening, but it's a drop in excuse the pun, it's a drop in the ocean. We need, like, to keep that momentum building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something else that we mentioned earlier when I was reading your bio is that you're a proponent of natural birth. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about that. I wonder if that also has something to do with your legacy.
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, I had a natural birth with my little boy. He was born at home, and strangely enough, he was born on a yoga mat. But that was kind of accidental, because I had the whole birthing pool, and it was a warm day, and I thought the birthing pool would be this sort of magical, watery moment for me, but I don't know, maybe it's because I'm Tory and I'm really quite an earthy person. I just couldn't handle the water. I just kept wanting to get out of it. And when I was like in labor with the midwives, I was on my hands and knees and I kept rocking. And eventually my knees started to get really sore. And I just said to Luca, his dad, can you get my yoga mat? And he got my yoga mat. And then very shortly afterwards, Harvey was born on it. And he was born in the, on my mat in the same place that I practice.
Wow.
In my house.
Wow.
Every day. So
magical.
Yeah. And yeah, so my experience in natural birth was, it was not a painful experience. It was a phenomenal, intense experience. But the word pain and birth for me, I think that this, we need to look at the way that we talk about birth, because I have seen so many women who are so terrified of that, you know, they're pregnant and they've so much fear about what the birth is going to be like. Because they hear all these stories about the, you know, excruciating pain. It's intense. It's so intense. But I would not equate the experience with pain. Now, that was my own. I know some people have very traumatic experiences in their birth, and I was fortunate that mine went well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really important for us as teachers in sort of any kind of embodied movement is to empower women to know that your body is designed for this. It's okay for you to, you know, make that choice and go for a natural birth and educate yourself to what that means. There's some amazing active birth workshop teachers out there, you know, teachers who specialize in this. You know, if you're pregnant or you're thinking about it, having a baby, is to go and find some woman who's an expert in that field, or a doula. These women are like, who practice midwifery and doulas,
mm-hmm.
they're like another league of angels that have come down, because that's a vocation, you know, to be with someone at 2 a.m. as they're like birthing
mm-hmm.
on any particular day of the week and you're on call. You know, there's something really powerful in that profession to me. And something happened in, I remember just the last few moments before, you know, he came out of me, is that I felt this very, very spiritual energy start to just amplify. And it was like a downward force that came like down through the crown, down through the core of my being, and it was what birthed him. And I don't know what that force is called yet. I'm still kind of inquiring. So, but that kind of force, maybe it was like Shakti energy, or, but I feel like that's what decided when it was time for him to come out. So I was very present and very aware to that. But had I have been on a lot of drugs or painkillers or numbing kind of anesthetics, maybe I wouldn't have had that experience. And that experience has still stayed with me, and I can tune into, even now talking about it, I feel it, has stayed with me and made me kind of feel invincible.
Wow.
There's a sort of like, you do that in that way, and there's like, I can do anything after
wow.
I've done that. And I think that is that power is being stripped away from women in the way that birth has become so medicalized, you know, that like most women in the Western world don't even know that there's an option to give birth to your baby in another way than
mm-hmm.
going to hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just to your listeners, if they're women or partners of women who are pregnant, just investigate, you know, there's a lot of amazing doulas and active birth teachers out there, and to try and find one and just explore, just scratch the surface of that vast subject.
Super interesting. Yeah. And I think we're so blessed here in Bali specifically because Robin Lim is a very famous midwife who won
Amazing
Person
woman.
Of the Year a few years ago. And so there's a natural birthing center here. So a lot of families discover the books that she's reading or the work that she's doing online, and they move to Bali or come here specifically
mm-hmm.
to have their babies. So
I was so lucky because I had some of my prenatal care here, and I walked into her clinic when I was about 6 weeks pregnant, thinking I was probably going to have a miscarriage. I was in terrible pain and cramps, and I walked in and she was on her bicycle about to leave because she'd been up all night delivering three babies. And she just saw me on my own, like looking really frazzled and scared. And she said, you're not okay. And she just sweeped her arms around me, and it just felt like I just dropped into mama's arms. And she took me in, and like, she was exhausted. She'd been up all night delivering new babies in the world. And she took care of me for like the whole morning. And then I was okay. Obviously, I didn't have a miscarriage, but I learned so much from those few hours with her. And then I got lucky enough to see her again some weeks later. So yeah, the work that she's doing and the women that she's training in that field of doula is incredible. It's so inspiring. Wow. She's the ultimate yogini, really.
Wow, beautiful. And you are also an ultimate yogini. And I love the work that you're sharing in the world through both your private and your group classes. I've had the privilege of taking some classes with you and having one-on-one sessions with you. And now you're about to embark on this new festival, and just so much love and blessings with that.
Oh, thank you, Fancy.
Where can our listeners find you?
Well, my website is yogadeep.com. I'm in Bali now, obviously, but next week I return to Dublin, and I'm going to be teaching there in the studio which I work in, which is called Little Bird in Dublin 8. And I also do a lot of private sessions in the Transforming Cellular Memory work and some groups in that. And then I have some trainings. I teach a training on sacred and energetic yoga anatomy. So it's a kind of combination of how I've brought in all my experience of this language of energy and how to interpret that through the more traditional form of sacred anatomy, like the koshas and the nadis and the chakras, and how that all works together as one giant system. I have a training in that, and yeah, lots of workshops, but come to Ireland.
And just a curiosity, do you do these transforming cellular memory sessions on Skype? Or
I do on Skype, yeah, because I have people from all over the world, and it's so interesting because people say, well, how can that work on Skype?
Yeah, but that was my question, because it's spiritual in a way.
Yeah, but we're like, distance and time is ultimately an illusion, so we kind of pierce through that veil, and I'm able to, even if you're in Antarctica, where one of my friends was recently, and I was in Thailand and we did a session, I can still feel her body, and I can still feel, you know, so yeah, it's that amazes me every time.
So maybe we could call you Kathy Pearson through the veils.
Okay.
Kathy, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Francie, and I love what you're doing with this podcast. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening and tuning into our podcast today. I really hope that you got a lot from it and feel really inspired and uplifted. Please help us help you by spreading the love. Tell a friend, leave us a 5-star review, and make sure to sign up to our love letter at pureflow.yoga to stay connected with the community and receive our free weekly love and inspirations, as well as be the first to know about our upcoming blog and podcast episodes. We're also going to share with you special deals on our Thailand yoga retreats that we just don't share anywhere else. And if you want to help support these efforts, which it takes a lot of time and love and energy to spread the love in this way, and we want to keep doing this for you, so please consider sharing a monthly donation, a contribution, and you can find that at pureflow.yoga/podcast. So hope you have a really beautiful day, a really beautiful week. Feel free to reach out anytime, and sending you so much love. Yeah.